Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for May the 27th, 2019. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this Memorial Day evening at our new time, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain Time, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time. I'd like to thank everyone for listening and remind everyone that this is your show. It's a call-in show. Welcomes your views, your comments, your questions. So call us at any time during the show. Grab your pen and paper. I'll give you the toll-free nationwide call-in number. It's 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number nationwide is 1-888-627-6008. Now over to Rick Hurley. How are you tonight, Rick?
Hey, David. Doing pretty well. I'm going to enjoy this new time at 7 o'clock. It will make getting to bed Monday nights a little bit easier and make it a little bit easier for our busy Tuesdays representing veterans. So I'm glad we made the change. I hope everyone can adjust to our change as well. I think everyone will find that everybody's going to benefit by an earlier show, 7 o'clock. Today was a good day. Before I get into some of the things we previously planned on talking about, I was able to get out and about on Memorial Day, as everybody knows, and go to some Memorial Day events. Yes, it's a sad occasion, but it's also a day of remembrance, and it's a day when a lot of veterans can be together and share in their stories. You know, I was walking around these different, I was in Ocala is one of the places I went, the Ocala Vet Park. And it's right there on Spring Street, right downtown. It's been still working on it, but it's an amazing facility. And I think they first started breaking ground about 20 years ago, and they go all the way back as far as the Civil War, honoring veterans who are from the Ocala, Marion County area who served in the Civil War, and you know they've got bricks set up for all of them, and just an amazing facility, and all the flags from all the different states, Union, and they've got an old Civil War gun there, and set up so that they had a band playing, and they also had they opened up a new museum, David, and a young man from the high school. He started this about 2 years ago when he was a sophomore in high school, collecting all the artifacts. And he's collected artifacts going back to World War I from families all the way up to the present. And I'm talking uniforms, you know, shoes, weapons. I mean, it's just an amazing thing that this young man, he's a senior in high school, what he did. And they had the ribbon-cutting ceremony this afternoon or this morning. And it was well attended by so many veterans in the area, and some politicians even took advantage of the opportunity to get a little photo time for themselves, which we know politicians love to do, especially with veterans. Just be nice if some of these politicians would actually do something for veterans. But walking around and listening to these veterans tell stories about their fallen comrades, and how proud they were of these fallen comrades. And I just kind of just sat back and just soaked it all in. And truly, just a, you know, and I didn't serve like you, David. You know, you did serve. I did not serve. So for me, it's a different perspective. And to hear them tell these stories, and there were a lot of tears. You know, it was just a terrific day. And then from there, I went off to another event down in Dunellen, Florida, and there too, they had the same type of setup, and lots of gathering, a couple hundred people were down there, so in Central Florida, we had quite the day, but You know, Memorial Day, as everyone knows, is a day to remember all the men and women who did lose their lives in the service of our country. You know, it's a little different perspective than Veterans Day. So Memorial Day, which is always observed on the last Monday of May, commemorates the men and women who did die while serving their country. And in observance of the holiday, many people visit the cemeteries, memorials, and volunteers often place American flags on each grave site at national cemeteries. You know, driving around, I noticed all the streets in where I live and then in Ocala were just lined with American flags. I'm not talking one or two. I'm talking, you know, a whole neighborhood of just, you know, five on each house. You know, for almost like 100 to 200 flags on each street. It was just incredible to see how our, you know, everyone honors our fallen. And in case you are wondering about the history of Memorial Day, as I said before, you know, Ocala honors some of their native residents who served in the Civil War, and it dates back to 3 years after the Civil War ended. That's when Memorial Day started, specifically on May the 5th, 1868. And the head of an organization of Union veterans, the Grand Army of the Republic, GAR, established Decoration Day as a time for the nation to decorate the graves of the dead with flowers. Major John A. Logan declared that Decoration Day should be observed on May the 30th. It is believed that date was chosen because flowers would be in bloom all over the country. The first large observance was held that year in Arlington National Cemetery, across the Potomac River from Washington, D.C. It was not until after World War I, however, that the day was expanded to honor those who have died in all American wars. And many years later, in 1971, Memorial Day was declared a national holiday by an act of Congress, though it is still often called Decoration Day. It was then also placed on the last Monday in May. To further ensure the sacrifices of Americans' fallen heroes were never forgotten, in December 2000, the U.S. Congress passed the President signed into law the National Moment of Remembrance Act, creating the White House Commission on the National Moment of Remembrance. The Commission's charter is to encourage the people of the United States to give something back to their country, which provides them so much freedom and opportunity, by encouraging and coordinating commemorations in the United States of Memorial Day and the National Moment of Remembrance. The National Moment of Remembrance encourages all Americans to pause wherever they are at 3 p.m. local time on Memorial Day for a minute of silence to remember and honor those who have died in service to the nation. So in that spirit, tonight on the Veterans News Hour, we'd like to pay tribute to those who lost their life in the service of our nation. Let us remember the fallen as well as their surviving families. When I was down in Dunellen at 3 o'clock, they had a bugler blowing taps right at 3 o'clock, and the whole town of Dunellen seemed to stop. So pretty amazing thing to witness. And we will start tonight's show with a message from the VA Secretary, Robert Wilkie. Doug, if you please roll the first tape.
Hello, I'm Robert Wilkie. Each year on Memorial Day, we take time to remember those who gave their lives in service to our country. At the Department of Veterans Affairs, we take great pride that our cemeteries are fitting shrines to the sacrifices of all of those who fell in battle. On Monday, May 27th, I urge everyone to observe this National Day of Remembrance and honor the sacrifices of those who serve principles greater than themselves. In the words of Abraham Lincoln, from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That cause is the enduring principle that freedom is the birthright of all men and women. From the American Revolution to the Civil War, World War I, World War II, Korea, through Vietnam and Desert Storm, to Afghanistan and Iraq, more than a million Americans have paid the ultimate price to secure the blessings of liberty for our nation. As we go about our duties providing America's living veterans the care, benefits, and services they have earned, let us also remember the men and women who gave their lives for our freedom. It is my privilege this year to join all veterans and all my friends at VA in honoring the service and sacrifice of our fallen, those who remain forever young in our memories. God bless their memory, your service, and our great nation.
Well, thanks to VA Secretary Robert Wilkie for that tape message for this Memorial Day. Tonight, we also recognize the surviving families of those who paid the ultimate sacrifice for our country. In this next segment, you will hear from a group of Gold Star family members honor the memories of their loved ones. You will hear from Lisa Emanuel Ruiz, whose 21-year-old son, Navy Petty Officer 3rd Class Manuel Ruiz, in 2007, who was killed in 2007 when the helicopter he was in was shot down over Iraq. You will also hear from Diane McDaniels, whose 19-year-old son, James, was killed on October 12, 2000, in the terrorist bombing of the USS Cole. And you will hear from Miss Amy Looney, whose 29-year-old Navy SEAL husband, Lieutenant Brendan Looney, was killed in Afghanistan in 2010. So, Doug, if you'll please roll the second tape.
It's a family nobody wants to be a member of. But we are. Enjoyed sports, normal boy stuff, but he's always making people laugh. Very good sense of humor.
He was 18 when he joined. They had a recruiter at his school, and he came home and he said, "Mom, I want to join the Navy." And I was hesitant about that, and so I went and talked to the recruiter. And I remember telling him, "Make sure you take care of my son," and he said, "We will."
When Brendan told me he wanted to be a SEAL, I was happy for him because I knew it was something that he wanted to do and I wanted to be supportive. But at the same time, I was scared.
I think he wanted to be where the action is and out in the field and helping others.
Yeah, I think so. He loved to help people, and that's what he did.
He was excited. I mean, as soon as he received his trident, he was ready to go and deploy. I was ready for him to go because I felt that the sooner he got over there, the sooner he was going to be able to get back to me.
It was, well, it really was hard on us because we went there, we took him to the ship and watched the sail off and saw a tear fall from his eye.
He deployed on March 9th, which is my birthday, in 2010. But I'll never forget those few moments before we left that day. And, you know, we always had this thing where we never wanted to say goodbye to each other because that seemed very permanent and very final. We would always say, "See you later."
Damaged in a terrorist attack in Yemen.
American sailors were killed.
I went into work. I walked in and I looked at the television because it was on. It was saying breaking news, attack on the USS Cole. And so I went downstairs and I see two men come getting out of the car. Both of them had uniforms. And I know from TV that when they come to your house, they're not coming to tell you good news. And that's when they told me, Ms. McDaniels, he said, "I have to tell you that your son is dead." So that's how we found out. It's October 12th in the evening. Yeah, he had died.
So this would have been their 59th combat mission on that deployment to Afghanistan. And they had a really successful deployment. They were ready to pass off to another SEAL team that came in. And on that mission, he lost his life there in Afghanistan in that helicopter.
They were in a CH-46 and it was shot down. And all seven perished.
I mean, it's very bittersweet because, of course, I would much prefer Brendan to be here today and every day going forward, but it also makes me very proud because I don't know many people out there that would be willing. I don't even know if I would be willing to go out there and put my life on the line.
It's tough. you know, because you got your son buried out there, and then you see many others buried up there, you know, when it's so many, and it's sad.
When we buried Manuel there, he was the last row, and then 10 years later now, there's like 15 more rows of graves that people have served and lost their lives.
I couldn't ask for a better son. He was really a good son. I mean, I can't think of anything bad I can say about him because there wasn't any.
We're proud of him and everything he did. He saved a lot of lives while he was here.
My perspective in life has really changed, and I value and appreciate people, and I appreciate the chance to just be able to experience life. And even though it's a different version of life, it's still something that I'm thankful for. And I know I have that chance because men like Brendan and men and women that serve in the military selflessly put their lives on the line each and every day so that I'm able to do that.
I'm glad he did what he did as far as serving, because that's what he wanted to do. Because I wouldn't want anyone else to go through what I went through and the other family members went through. Because we went through a lot.
I don't want anybody to understand it, because I think in order for you to truly understand it, you have to experience it yourself. So I want them to just see Gold Star family members as strong and resilient and wanting nothing more but then to carry on their loved one's legacy. We don't want them to be forgotten. We want them to stay alive in our memory and in the memory of generations well beyond our years.
We'd like to thank the Navy Gold Star Family Program and those family members for sharing their thoughts and their experiences with us. I think it's very fitting on Memorial Day that we remember not only those that have lost their lives in service of the country, but remember the fact that there are family members who live on afterwards. Who always carry that pain and the loss, and even though the rest of the country may go on without really remembering that, except for perhaps once a year. I think it's also fitting that as we remember the sacrifices of those who gave their lives, that we can be motivated to dedicate ourselves to the important work, the equally or even more important work of trying to reduce the chance of future wars. What do you think, Rick?
Well, that would be an amazing thing. And it certainly is. You know, it seemed, back when we were younger, David, you know, after the Vietnam War, and by the time it ended, I was still in high school. I didn't walk around, you know, living in war like we do today. You know, we had that little, Reagan had his little thing in Grenada, and not until, 90 did we ramp up again. So, you know, we went a substantial period of time without war in our lives. And today, that's just not it. We have a whole generation of kids who have been, who were born when the war started in Afghanistan and are just graduating from high school. That's all they know. And in these rural parts of the country, it's even more of an impact because, you know, I know, you know, where I live in Central Florida, north of Tampa, and I'm in Tampa a lot, the feeling about being in engaged in a war is different in Central Florida than it is in Tampa. You feel it more in Central Florida. And, you know, it's more of a rural community. You got more veterans up here. And, you know, it's all around you. So, you know, for these young people who have to endure that, you know, I feel bad for them because you really shouldn't have to. You know, peace should be the topic, not war. You know, putting together a budget for the Department of Defense and having Congress then step up every once in a while and throw another $1 trillion down on an engagement overseas, you know, we shouldn't be talking about stuff like that. We should be talking about putting some of that money into our infrastructure. You know, we talk about this on the show all the time, you know, into our roads, our airports, you know, maybe a train system. Those are the kind of things that we should be doing for our young people so that they can grow up with a brighter future here in America than one dealing with engagement overseas and every once in a while watching one of our citizens come home in a body bag. Sometimes military engagement is necessary. But it shouldn't be it's not the way we should start the day. We should start the day trying to figure out how can we live in peace. And, you know, some people who may be listening to the show might be thinking that, you know, well, Miss, you know, Hurley over here is living a pipe dream. Well, I disagree because there are examples in the past and present that show that peace does work. And discussions about peace are, you know, work. And, you know, I would ask the, you know, our media that's out there writing articles. You know, start writing articles about conflict resolution, peace. Try to get some of our politicians to start talking about that on the Senate floor in the House. Those are the kind of discussions we need to start having now. You know, we talk about climate change and how we need to start doing it now because it's already too late. You hear that all the time. Well, this whole business about war needs to start now because, you know, the costs of war are going to be paid for many decades to come. And that's only if we stop now. You know, if we can, every day that we continue, you know, we're charging that credit card. You know, we're not paying it down. We're just charging the credit card and leaving it to our children, our grandchildren to pay off. And that's if we stop now. So, you know, peace, you know, especially on a day like today, it's very important, I think, that we think about that. Because all those men and women who died in previous wars, they died with the accent on living in peace, not living in war. And, you know, it'd be a great tribute to all those men and women who have lost their lives in service to start focusing on peace and not continuing to ramp up. And I honor all those, you know, men and women who are currently serving. God bless you. You know, we need you. You know, you got our backs. We live a great life here in America because of the men and women who do serve. But that doesn't mean the discussions about peace can't stop, shouldn't start to happen now. Back to you, David.
Well, I think those are all great points, and it seems common in recent years, and now more than just a few years, But we hear the slogan of support the troops, and you'll see people with decals on their cars or the yellow ribbon, support the troops. Well, there's another point to that, which is a good way to support the troops, current troops and future troops, is to avoid getting entangled in war and creating war, which has been now even more than a generation. The current conflicts that are still going on in Iraq and Afghanistan that have spread to other countries, Syria and Libya and many other countries in Africa. But the Iraqi involvement really dates back far earlier than the 2003 invasion, when the United States invaded Iraq in 2003. Remember, there was Desert Shield starting in August of 1990, Desert Storm, the combat phase of it in early 1991. But then it really didn't stop. Most of the troops came back home, but there were still troops throughout all of the 90s, all the way up to 2003, stationed in the Middle East and Saudi Arabia and some of the surrounding countries, enforcing no-fly zones and other restrictions on Iraq. It was a constant thing, and it was kind of setting the stage for, once 9/11 to happen, that there were really the warmongers in the Pentagon and the White House that were all locked and loaded, used that as an opportunity, which they did, to then go after Saddam Hussein and topple that his government in Iraq. But our time in Iraq has long preceded 2003. It goes back to 1990, but really even further back than that. We've been involved in these Middle Eastern wars. For those that don't recall the history, let me refresh your memory. Going back to let's go back a decade earlier, to the 1980s, when for about 8 years, Iraq and Iran were in a very bloody war. And the United States was involved behind the scenes. We were actually helping Iraq. And that was for most of all of the 1980s, even starting when Carter was in office. If you recall the hostage period of time, 444 days with Iran. And my point being that there really hasn't been peace in that area of the world for many, many decades. And it's really an opportunity now that we really need to get the leaders of the country to change their way of thinking, a paradigm shift away from this perpetual warfare that we see, this never-ending global war on terror, which is really creating even more enemies, and shift that towards, yes, it's very complicated, very time-consuming. It's not simple, but the idea of building peace. And that's the focus of our project, our separate project, which listeners can check out. Our website is stopwar.today. Kind of interesting website name, stopwar.today, not .com or .org, stopwar.today. You can also follow us on Facebook, the Facebook search engine, type in Stop War Today, or you can go to the stopwar.today website and look for the little Facebook icon. But we've posted some interesting Memorial Day links and articles and videos to watch for your food for thought on this very topic of, thinking about really what were the effects of the Iraq War, for instance, what are the lessons we should be taking away from that, and it's just part of our larger project. Doing our part, hopefully we'll have an impact. As part of that, we want to publicize the work of the Cost of War Project of Brown University. It has a terrific website, which is easy to remember. It's costsofwar.org, and that's the Cost of War Project of Brown University. But also publicize the work of other groups and individuals, and that includes publicizing the United States Institute of Peace. Rick, I know you've done kind of informal polling. What have you found about what Americans know about the USIP?
To be blunt, nothing.
Nothing, okay.
It is very sad that this organization that's been around since 1984, and while it only has a minimal budget of approximately $37.5 million a year, and when I say minimal, when you compare that to what the Department of Defense budget is, it's peanuts, it's pennies compared to the DOD. But the fact remains that it is a department in D.C. It does get funded, and taxpayers are paying for it. And it is out there, you know, doing the work of, you know, peace builders. I mean, it's not like you can't find it anywhere, but the bottom line is nobody that I know of. And when I say nobody, I got to give credit to one person because since I've known about the, USIP, as they say, I have polled people, and one person, a friend of mine up in Tallahassee, said, "Oh, I know all about it." And he did know all about it. He actually knew more about it than I did. But he was the only one, and I'm talking hundreds of people. So, you know, we can start right there. Start right there and get that out to the public and ask people. You know, we've got one of the greatest things, in the world, which is your cell phone. And this Google thing that my kids keep telling me about. And if you just jump on it and do, you know, United States Institute of Peace, USIP, you'll be amazed at what will pop up. And you'll be so amazed because you'll sit back and go, how the heck did I ever not know about this organization? Because they do a lot of good work, and they're constantly trying to do, more things. But we need to get the word out about them and hopefully, you know, through this show and through other, avenues, that organization will become more familiar to the general public. Back to you, David.
I agree. And USIP's website is easy to remember. It's usip.org. As far as the history of the U.S. Institute of Peace, it dates back to at least, the 1970s specifically, but actually the idea of having an organization in the part of the federal government whose purpose is to promote peace dates back to the earliest days of the country, from the late 1700s at various points throughout the 1800s. There were congressional and other leaders that proposed a cabinet-level Department of Peace. We all know that hasn't happened. The closest thing we have to it is this congressionally funded nonpartisan agency, which is not of cabinet level prestige or rank, the U.S. Institute of Peace. But I'm sorry, say again, Doug. It's okay. We have Jason. Let's go ahead and take this caller. Jason.
Hey, this is Jason. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Jason. Hey, Jason. Thanks for calling in. Do me a favor. Tell. I was trying to tell our listeners about the young man who started that museum in downtown Ocala, and you were telling me about it. What an incredible young
Absolutely.
Man. Tell us about that.
So there's a young man. He lives here in Ocala. Matter of fact, he was the president, I believe, of the Forest High School class of last year. His name is Adam Sines. Matter of fact, he's very simply a historian of our local history here in Ocala, Marion County, in general of the Florida area. He has many military members that served in his family. And, you know, he worked pretty diligently to gather over so many years, you know, really not that many. He's young, maybe 18, 19 years old, I believe. And he gathered the history of this town. And from what I've talked to him in personal conversation, would just look on YouTube you look on Google and different sites to purchase anything that came up about Ocala. Well, over so many years, he built up a collection of materials, history, that letters from World War II, from people from Ocala that served in World War II, that wrote letters back to their loved ones. And recently, he linked with our Veterans Park in Ocala, and there was an old Veterans Resource Center that they utilized for the veterans resources, but they moved over to Vets Helping Vets building right there in front of the library, in front of the Vets Park. So So over time, this young gentleman, and I believe Jeff Askew and a good gentleman, Ron, that runs the Vets Park as a volunteer, worked with this young man and said, you know, we really want to turn this building that they have into something different. So they did. They turned the old Veterans Resource Center into an exhibit now of old military memorabilia that was gathered by community members here by this young gentleman, Adam. And they opened their grand opening today for people to walk through the exhibit. The park is at 2601 East Fort King Street in Ocala, 34470. Their phone number is 352-671-8422. You can check it out anytime. And they're even looking for more materials from the community. And it really just gives a great history of what our community was built on, the French and Indian War and all these other battles that our communities and different generals from the South and the North had bases here. And you can just see some of that memorabilia here. And it's amazing to watch that culture and history really just kind of come to life. And people now have an opportunity to say, you know, we live in Ocala. We understand what it is, but really how far does it go back in defining what our country's history is? And this young gentleman did an amazing job at just giving people that chance to see where we really come from here in Florida, the Marion County area, with all his great memorabilia history from other local community members and veterans. And it's just something, it's a sight to see, actually. It really is. For a young gentleman like that.
I was there for the ribbon cutting, and there were a couple hundred people all gathered around, and it was quite the sight to see. You know, Jason, you and I are working on another project, we're going to refer to it for right now as Camp Hope, but we may come up with another name for it. But it's essentially based on Camp Hope, which is in Houston, Texas. And I know, you know, you're a graduate of that program. You're doing amazing work yourself in helping to try to make Camp Hope a reality here somewhere in Central Florida between Orlando and Tampa. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about some of the work that you're doing to try to help get Camp Hope to become a reality?
Absolutely. I was recently linked with a program under the gentleman of Mr. Birdwell. I had the opportunity of, in really in the hardest time, a really very hard time in my life outside the military, I sought some treatment and help with other veterans. So I went to this place, and it was a Birdwell program called Camp Hope, yes. I ended up really doing some stuff with the hit, one of his programs. And then Mr. Birdwell had another foundation, and it was based off the same thing, built off combat veterans who really just, you know, wanted to give back to their fellow veterans and try to make a life again, you know, to kind of live outside and into society with what we needed to do. But you also realized there was much more an effort of veterans than there was of anything else. But so what we did was Mr. Birdwell, the Birdwell Foundation, opened his efforts to all those that do have PTSD. And what we're trying to do is bring down here a facility that people have PTSD and those traumas and different programs for that, such as those which is really prominent, which is the veterans. This is where we built our program off of, to others with people who have MST or different kinds of trauma, first responders. And we put our first responder into a former first responder into treatment in the past 3 days, which we put in a great facility, the Cannon Recovery House.
Jason.
And we're bringing what that is and what Camp Hope was, which was.
Jason, just so you know, you're breaking up a little bit, so.
Right there, I'm sorry. Well, kind of to summarize what the Camp Hope was veterans across the country that all suffer from PTSD is doing the same thing, but bringing more of just, not just combat vets, but veterans in general, female veterans, the first fire police department, and others in different demographics, really focusing on what it looks like to heal and treat that those traumas by doing it through this peer support, which has become the primary treatment for PTSD and trauma.
Yeah, it seems like
we're losing you, man. I don't know if you're on the road or what, but you're not coming in clear. Yeah, we're gonna let Jason go. And Jason, thanks very much for calling in. Jason is doing some great work out there, and really appreciate having him on the ground. And he's constantly going out to other veterans and trying to help them, you know, who are struggling with post-traumatic stress or addiction, alcohol and/or drug addiction, which is related to their post-traumatic stress. So he's always seems to be, you know, out and about, running around. He's probably out there right now. It's probably why he's not coming in too clearly, because he's probably, you know, out there trying to help some veteran. And we really appreciate all the work you do, Jason. And hopefully we're going to get this Camp Hope program finished. It's essentially what we're looking for is about 20 acres of land. Maybe there's somebody, a benefactor out there who's got a whole bunch of land you want to jump on board here. You can give me a call, 727-612-1515. We're looking for land where we can put this Camp Hope together. Basically it would be a spiritual-based 12-step type program for veterans, men and women suffering from post-traumatic stress. It's a huge project, but one that's sorely needed here in the state of Florida. And we want to base it somewhere between Orlando and Tampa, so that the veterans have access to the airport, and we can get veterans from all over the country to come in, just like the Houston camp, where they're right there in Houston, and people fly in and out from all over the country. So we want to do the same thing here in Florida. And so again, I want to thank Jason for calling in. Back to you, David.
Yeah, that's a great project, as you mentioned, Rick, the Camp Hope program. We've had guests, including Jason, but also David Malsby from Camp Hope on our show a couple times, going back to September of 2017, our first year on the show. And maybe we can get Jason back on the show, hopefully with a clear connection, maybe in a couple weeks. And we've got another guest already lined up for next week, and then the week after that, but maybe or 2 weeks after that, maybe in 2 weeks from now, get him back on the show. But yeah, the Camp Hope Florida project is a great goal and benefit a lot of veterans in this state. As far as the Memorial Day and also using it as a time to dedicate ourselves to the work of trying to reduce wars and paradigm shift away from the perpetual war to building peace. We were talking about the U.S. Institute of Peace. I urge listeners to check out the website, usip.org. Its history, as Rick already mentioned, dates back to 1984 when Congress created it by legislation signed by President Reagan. But its origins date back earlier than that. In the 1970s, there were a group of congressmen who were World War II combat veterans who had the same thought of let's look at ways to promote peace and do it with some structure. And their idea was, let's have an academy that would be kind of the counterpart to the military academies, you know, West Point, Naval Academy, Air Force, etc., but one that's designed and devoted towards the study of promoting peace. That was part of the idea, but not the only part. The other part of the idea was actually one involving action, getting out in the field. So the USIP was created in 1984, and for quite a few years, it had just a very small staff and was working out of leased space in Washington, D.C. And then about 8 years or so ago, it finally got its own very modern-looking headquarters, which Rick and I attended a conference there back in October. And it's a very impressive, modern-looking building with the huge atrium that they use for conferences, and the windows, which are about three stories in height, face south, and you can see the Lincoln Memorial just a few blocks away. So it's located on the northwest corner of the Washington Mall. But to me, it's kind of ironic to have such a fancy modern building, but it's so poorly funded. Rick said it's the annual budget is less than $38 million a year. and Congress, with only a couple exceptions, has prohibited private donations to the USIP. So it's limited to what Congress gives it. And $38 million a year, or even less than that, is pittance, considering the challenges that it faces. And it does have people working out. It's not just a think tank, but it's an action organization. It has experts out in the field in different countries, some of the smaller countries in Africa, but also getting involved in Iraq and some of the other countries. And these experts often use mediation skills and negotiation skills, but also studying the specific causes of conflicts in those countries and trying to work out ways to resolve those. So it's an impressive organization. The education part of the USIP is open to the public. You can take online courses. You can buy books from their library. Some of the courses are free. Others you have to pay, but they're relatively inexpensive online courses if you want to learn more about this complex subject. But like I said, they have an online library. They have conferences every week. And if you can't go to D.C. to watch them, to participate, most of them are live streamed through the USIP YouTube channel. So it's there. But the interesting thing, like you mentioned, Rick, is hardly anyone knows about it except, you know, a small group of people that kind of live in a bubble, mostly in Washington, D.C. or academia. And we hope to change that, starting with let's publicize it.
Hey, David, tell everybody what's across the street from the USIP.
Well, interesting is the State Department. And when we went to this conference, Rick, correct me if my memory is off here, but there seemed to be a distinct absence of many State Department people there. And we brought that to the attention of some of the USIP people that we were talking with. Said, where are the State Department people? And they assured us, they got a little defensive. The public affairs guy we were talking to got a little defensive. And he assured us that they do have a very close working relationship with the State Department. Which you know, it's a right across the street. It's
you're being kind when you say defensive.
Okay, well, it was also a little weird in trying to set up our participation at this conference because, as you know, Rick, we had gone there with the idea of filming some interviews as part of our project. So we brought our camera along, but they were our focal point was one of their press officers. They seemed very suspicious and kind of paranoid. I don't know what they were hiding, if anything, or maybe they were more concerned that the people might realize that they're really not doing a whole lot. But other than talking amongst themselves and holding conferences that may not have a great impact. Like I say, when was the last time you turned on the nightly news on any of the major networks and ever heard of the USIP? I never have. I mean, I know about it, but not through the regular media. So right. We're hoping to change that. It's just a sign of why there is such a problem. And everything is about the military. And yes, we want to thank our veterans and remember the service of those. But I think we can also support our veterans by speaking out, promoting peace so that we don't have more people dying in these wars.
Wasn't the motto of World War II? The war to end all wars?
That was World War One. The war to end all
wars. World War One. Sorry.
World War One, and then 20 years later, you know, Germany and Japan and other countries, were Italy, they were back on the warpath. But in any event, there's a lot to this subject. We've got about 5 minutes left in the show, but I do want to make a pitch for something that I've talked about in previous shows, which is another book we want to promote on this subject. It's written for a general audience. It's called A Mighty Case Against War by Kathy Beckwith. And the good thing for those of you that are listening is that you can get a free copy by contacting us. Send me an email. My email address is lawcorey1@verizon.net. That's LAWCORY, the number one, at verizon.net. Again, LAWCORY, the number one, at Verizon.net. And if you forget that or you haven't been able to write that down as fast as I'm talking, go to our show's website, bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour, and you'll find my contact information and Rick Hurley's contact information. Contact either of us, and we'll be more than happy to get you your own free copy of this book, A Mighty Case Against War. It's basically a very practical, easy-to-read book. It's well-researched. It took Kathy Beckwith about 7 years from start to finish. 6 of those years was doing research. And it's basically a couple things. It's a history lesson analyzing our prior wars and perhaps how they could have been avoided. And then the second part being, what can we all do now to look at things differently and try to promote peace? And that extends to those in government power, government positions that have the ability to put our troops in harm's way. Anyway, so there's a lot here to talk about. Again, go to our website for this project, which is stopwar.today. And you also check us out on Facebook. Type in "Stop War Today" in the Facebook search engine, or on our website, stopwar.today. Look for the little Facebook icon and click on that, and it'll take you to our Facebook page. So that's enough for me for the moment. Over to you, Rick.
Well, I guess we have time for some quick news. On May 23rd, press release from the VA stated that as of May 14th, the White House VA hotline has answered more than 250,195 calls since it went live June 1st, 2017. The hotline number is 855-948-2311. That's 855-948-231. It serves veterans, their families, caregivers, survivors by giving them a direct, non-emergency contact line available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year with agents, the majority of whom are veterans or from a veteran family, who are trained to address general and common VA inquiries. The White House hotline is quickly becoming VA's front door for questions or concerns about VA and community service resources, said VA Secretary Robert Wilkie. This milestone is a testament to the VA's commitment to improving the veteran experience. While veterans are encouraged to use existing VA contact centers, the hotline offers an alternative, always the right number approach. Again, that number is 855-948-2311. It transfers calls when needed to VA subject matter experts such as the Veterans Crisis Line. The hotline serves as VA's front door to listen to veterans' experiences, identify trends in veteran feedback, and resolve veteran health benefits and services concerns anywhere in the department. And as far as the Veterans Crisis Line, this then is a nice segue into the Coaching Into Care program, which we also talk about every week. This is our reminder to veterans and their families that this is a very important VA program, Coaching Into Care. This program helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call. The number is 1-888-823-7458. It's a toll-free number. Again, 1-888-823-7458. 7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Coaching Into Care's number, one more time, 1-888-823-7458. This is a very important program, people, so write it down. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, that the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Well, it's time for us to go. Quick hour tonight. I'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli and Corey and Hurley Law Group, and thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. Please tune in next week here at our new time, which is 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time, bbsradio.com, Station 1. Our special guest next week will be Navy veteran Lauren Price, who leads an excellent veterans advocacy group called Veteran Warriors. She's an expert on many veteran issues, including disabilities caused by open-air burn pit solutions, as well as the VA caregiver program. So we hope you'll tune in next week. Until then, have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.